Well, our special guest this morning, Dr. Pastor von Karutchenheimer-Schwarzkopf, and so it goes, he demonstrated the absurdity, I hope, that many people pompously promote. And that is, with all seriousness, in the backing of billions of dollars in supposed studies, that a miracle has occurred. What's the miracle? Well, Christian apologist Glenn Shrivner put it this way. Christians believe in the virgin birth of Jesus. Materialists believe in the virgin birth of the cosmos. Then he adds, choose your miracle. And Richard Dawkins, a famous British atheist, said this last Easter in an interview. And Shrivner responded to some of what he'd said. He said, Christians believe that Jesus emerged alive again from the tomb. But Richard Dawkins believes that all life emerged from non-life. And without a God of resurrection to work the wonder, choose your miracle. Admittedly, as we are beginning our study of Genesis, it does begin with a miracle. The issue before us is it reasonable to believe and take the Bible as fact and allow it to govern our lives, or is it a bunch of bunk? Which miracle before us are we going to believe? To begin with, what's a miracle? I looked at Oxford. Could have looked at any other dictionary, I suppose. And a miracle is a surprising and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific law and is therefore considered to be work of a divine agency, such as the miracle of rising from the grave, or a highly improbable or extraordinary event, development, or accomplishment that brings very welcome consequences. It was a miracle. More people hadn't been killed or injured. Or thirdly, an amazing product or achievement or an outstanding example of something, a machine which was a miracle design. Well, we're going to go with the first one, something beyond natural or scientific laws. Well, I approach Genesis as presenting a miracle, quite a few of them, in fact. That is something beyond, way beyond natural law and is an extraordinary event. At the same time, it's a straightforward account of creation, of the earth, the universe, and everything in it. Genesis is not a book of legends, myths, fairy tales, folklore. We're going to look at the different genres, the historical, as well as sometimes the poetic. Genesis was not written as a scientific treatise. That wasn't its purpose. But where it touches on scientific issues, it does not contradict known scientific facts. In fact, from what we can observe in the universe today, I believe the Genesis account backs us up. You know, many scientists, though not certainly all, believe the universe began in a Big Bang 14 billion years ago. And according to that theory, the Big Bang was a massive explosion that produced two things, energy and matter. Before that, the entire universe, they say, was compressed in a bubble thousands of times smaller than a pinhead. It was hotter and more dense than anything that can be imagined. The universe grew and cooled, and eventually stars and galaxies formed. Well, by 4.6 billion years ago, that's the latest they say, by the collisions of particles in a large cloud of material, the Earth was formed. And slowly, gravity gathered all these particles of dust and gas, and they formed larger clumps, and these clumps continued to collide and gradually became bigger and bigger, eventually forming the Earth. Well, that's the explanation given us by our government, our textbooks, and most of what we find in the media as to how we got there. But no one has an explanation for where matter and energy came from. They just keep pushing things back. Well, it must have been then 8 billion years ago. No, it must have been 9. Well, then 10, 13. Well, I'm waiting. Pretty soon it's going to be 40 billion. And I still will have to ask, well, then where do those self-existing, self-generating, eternal dust molecules and gas globules come from? That's not a question I have to answer. It's what they do. What is put forth as science today would have everyone believe that chaos produces information and complexity. Non-reason produces reason. Non-life produces life. Unconsciousness produces consciousness. Randomness produces fine-tuning. The immaterial produces the material. Non-energy produced energy. And they call us unscientific. Carl Sagan famously said, the cosmos is all that there is or was or ever will be. Well, that's what the world, who scoffs at the likes of us, says. They believe that, in essence, though they wouldn't say it this way, nothing plus time plus chance equals everything. Let me propose to you that that is their miracle. And that's a big one. By way of contrast, our miracle is that God plus nothing equals everything. Now, if you pick up a textbook or turn on the TV, you will hear that those who don't believe that our universe is simply a product of naturalistic, materialistic, evolutionary processes are considered a subspecies below Neanderthal. In their view, only complete and utter fools would even begin to entertain the notion that Darwinian evolution does not adequately account for the existence of, can I say it again, energy, information, complexity, reason, life, consciousness, fine-tuning, and matter. Yet what they're promoting makes as much sense as putting a stick of dynamite in a pile of bricks and expecting to find a fence or a house put completely together. And yet, really, a fence or even a house is not that exciting. Sir Fred Doyle, a British astronomer and mathematician, said, "The chance that higher life might have emerged through evolutionary processes is comparable with the chance that a tornado sweeping through a junkyard might assemble a Boeing 747 from the material therein." Well, guess what? And 747, that's complex. Those are amazing. But they're nothing compared to human eyeballs. Nothing compared to human eyeball. William Paley was an English philosopher in the 1700s, and he was a master craftsman, and he'd built a telescope, and all his friends were so amazed at what he could see. And he happened to be a believer in God, and this is what he determined. The eye was made for vision. The telescope was made for assisting it. Each uses a sophisticated lens to achieve its purpose and function. Both reflect and manipulate light. Both are able to bring an object into proper focus. The muscles surrounding the soft lens of the eye bring objects into focus, while the telescope uses dials to move the lens. With this in mind, he asked his friends, "Is it reasonable to believe that the telescope was not created by a craftsman, but the eye was not? Should they not both be considered products of design?" Well, interestingly enough, among other things Darwin wrote and recognize what he said, "The eye to this day gives me a cold shudder." And then he went on, because he realized even 170 years ago, however many years ago it was, he himself recognized the eye is very complex. The August 15, 2005 cover of Time magazine was entitled "Evolution Wars," and it talked a lot about evolution versus the theory of intelligent design, and among other things, it touched on the human eye. And the idea that it would be very difficult for the eye to be a product of accidental mutations. Michael B.E., he's written many books, I would recommend him. An American biochemist wrote, "How could a process of gradual improvements produce a complex organ that needs all its parts, pinhole, lens, light-sensitive surface, in order to work? It's like a camera, which someone has clearly designed. The tiny retina of the eye has 130 million receptor cells, 124 million of which are rod-shaped and enable us to differentiate between light and darkness. 6 million of these receptor cells are cone-shaped and can identify up to 8 million variations of color. Could this really occur by a random purposeless process?" And then you think about the fact that the eye is actually attached to a body and all those things as well. According to John Blanchard, a partial eye is useless. 5% of an eye would not give 5% vision. It would give none. What is more, even if all the physical components of an eye were in place, they would achieve nothing unless they were precisely, quote, wired to amazing complex of nerve cells in the brain. Small wonder someone has suggested examination of the eye as a cure for atheism. You could have a fully developed eye, but unless it's hooked up to a brain, not going to do any good. Darwinian atheist Michael Ruse on one occasion even admitted that evolution is his religion. In fact, it's his miracle. And that, I propose to you, is exactly what evolution is. Even those who don't believe the Bible's account of creation of the universe, if they're honest and willing to admit it, they will realize that random, unguided chance has no chance of producing what exists. Many, therefore, believe in it despite all the evidence, which is exactly what they accuse us of doing, belief without evidence. Francis Crick, who co-discovered the double helix, Nobel Prize winner, no dummy, in some areas, said, "What is so frustrating for our present purpose is it seems almost impossible to give any numerical value to the probability of what seems a rather likely sequence of events. An honest man, armed with all the knowledge available to us now, could only state that in some sense the origin of life appears at the moment to be almost a miracle. So many are the conditions which would had to have had been satisfied to get it going." Almost like there's a miracle. The guy unraveling DNA. Will Doyle, the guy that talked about the junkyard tornado assembly in the 747, said, "From my earliest training as a scientist, I was strongly brainwashed to believe that science cannot be consistent with any kind of deliberate creation. That notion has to be painfully shed. I'm quite uncomfortable in this situation, the state of mind I now find myself in. But there's no logical way out of it. I now find myself driven to this position by logic. There's no other way in which we can understand the precise ordering of the chemicals of life except to invoke the creations on a cosmic scale. We were hoping as scientists there would be a way round our conclusion, but there isn't." Hoyle added, "A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests a super intellect is monkeyed with physics, as well as chemistry and biology, and there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature." The late Dr. Richard Lewontin from Harvard said, "Our willingness to accept scientific claims that are against common sense is the key to an understanding of the real struggle between science and the supernatural. We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs, in spite of the tolerance of the scientific community for unsubstantiated just-so stories, because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. It's not that the methods and institutions of science somehow compel us to accept a material explanation of the phenomenal world, but on the contrary, we are forced by our a priori adherence to material causes to create an apparatus of investigation and a set of concepts that produce material explanations, no matter how counterintuitive, no matter how mystifying to the uninitiated. Moreover, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door." To be honest and to give the full quote, I continue. "The eminent Kant scholar Louis Beck used to say, anyone who could believe in God could believe in anything. To appeal to an omnipotent deity is to allow that to happen at any moment, or is to allow that at any moment the regularities of nature may be ruptured, that miracles may happen." Guess what? Lewontin is clinging to a miracle. He cannot stomach the idea of there being a different kind of miracle, and so despite evidence, he clings to his prior assumptions. I can picture him late at night in his lab, rubbing the temple, saying, "There can't be a God, there can't be a God, there can't be a God. Therefore, it must just be." The next quote describes people like him. It was featured in Life magazine in 1982. "To postulate that the development and survival of the fittest is entirely a consequence of chance mutation seems to me a hypothesis based on no evidence and irreconcilable with the facts. These classical evolutionary theories are a gross oversimplification of an immensely complex and intricate mass of facts, and it amazes me that they are swallowed so uncritically and readily and for such a long time and by so many scientists without murmur of protest." The neurosurgeon Michael Ignor was quoted in Evolution News and Science Today. "Doctors are like detectives. We look for patterns, and in the human body, patterns look very much like they were designed. Doctors know that from the intricate structure of the human brain to the genetic code, our bodies show astonishing evidence of design. That's why most doctors, nearly two-thirds according to national polls, don't believe that human beings arose merely by chance and natural selection. Most doctors don't accept evolutionary biology as an adequate explanation for life. Doctors see firsthand the design of life." Dr. George Wald, a Nobel Prize winner, said this, "There are only two possibilities as to how life arose. One is spontaneous generation arising to evolution. The other is a supernatural creative act of God. There's no third possibility. Spontaneous generation, life arose from non-living matter, was scientifically disproved 120 years ago by Louis Pasteur and others. That leaves us with only one possible conclusion, that life arose as a creative act of God. I will not accept that philosophically because I do not want to believe in God. Therefore, I choose to believe in that which I know is scientifically impossible, spontaneous generation arising to evolution. At least he's honest, sort of. He goes on to say, most modern biologists, having reviewed with satisfaction the downfall of the spontaneous generation hypothesis, yet unwilling to accept the alternative belief in special creation, are left with nothing. As I prepared, I found gazillions of quotes. I tried to Google and make sure every quote was actually cited somewhere else so that I'm not giving you bogus information. Lots of the quotes I was going to use, I thought, oh, well, there is no such professor as that. Or they came from the wrong institution, so I questioned. All these I could back up as I found them. Why am I hammering this so hard? Because I never want you to think that your faith, you have to, in order to keep your faith and use your brain, you have to chuck. Let me start over. I never want you to think that in order to keep your faith and use your brain, you can use your faith. You don't have to chuck your brain to have faith, is what I'm saying, in the living God. It is not unscientific to believe in a creator God. However, what happens? We as Christians are told over and over that we who believe in God in the Bible are fools, idiots, head buried in the sand, ignoramuses. Anytime a school district considers presenting creation as an alternative schools, the whole world comes apart screaming, the end of the world is nigh. The school or state is against science. Kids will be brainwashed. Everyone in Alabama will be viewed as an airhead kind of thing. Truth be told, science should be about examining the evidence and seeing where it goes. Education, especially higher education, should be about presenting views and teaching people how to think. Instead, what has happened is those that scream loud enough start to convince everyone else, maybe we're the idiots. Don't go there, believer in Christ. People of God, don't be ashamed of your faith. Your miracle makes more sense than their miracle. Amen. Your miracle makes more sense than theirs. Our Bible, again, is not a scientific textbook, but where it speaks of science, it is not inaccurate. Our faith is not unscientific. Go back in time, all the great scientists in the world were believers that God had everything to do with everything that came to being. Now, they may not have been born again Christians, but they at least knew that what they saw did not just come about by waiting. Just by waiting. We choose to believe the miracle of God creating. Evolutionary theory clings to its own miracle, billions upon billions and billions, while straight-facedly telling you that Christianity is at best incompatible with science or at the worst at war with it. Now, as a side note, there are many great scientists today who are committed to the truth wherever it leads them, whether or not they are followers of Jesus. But I will tell you, there also are a whole lot of liars in lab coats, deliberately leading people astray. We've all seen that, those. And a slightly political comment, during our COVID time, who declared this is the science, have been proven to be full of baloney in many, many areas. The experts told us this is science in many areas have been shown to have made everything up. Not everything, but quite a bit. So, I'm not anti-science, but when you have magazines like Scientific American publishing articles like Sex Refined, the idea of two sexes is oversimplistic. And they claim biologists now think there's a larger spectrum than just binary female and male. I want to tell you, go back in time, quote the hippies, and question authority. You don't have to listen to someone that has a bunch of letters behind their name or before their name and assume they know what they're talking about, because we all know they don't. That is not all of them. With all that backdrop, and again, I'm not anti-science, but I want to say tell the truth. Lead where the evidence goes, and let's talk. You do not have to assume that what's in print or said before the podium, and so check me out as well, is 100% fact. Use the brain God gave you. And if you find I got a bad quote, tell me and I'll make it right. I expect you to call me out too. So with all that having said, yeah, that was quite the background, let's go to Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But why am I telling you that? Because really, you got to choose your miracle. Did God create, or did things just create themselves? You're going to have to make that decision. Before we even get to the first day of creation, no, we start with what was in the beginning God. That tells us there was a beginning point to the universe. It was created by God. Before the universe was made, there was no universe. No earth, no time, no space. That's hard to imagine. Everything wasn't black, because black, I think, is the absence of something, and there wasn't even something to be absent of. And the universe wasn't a place. But what did we find when you go back all the way? Like I'm asking others to say, well, okay, that, we'll keep on going back. Where's that dust? Where's that gas? Where's that energy, non-existent energy and matter? Keep on going back. Well, when we keep going back, yes, we get to the fact that we believe there is a God. That's our miracle. The Bible doesn't say, let me give you a treatise on the existence of God. It simply said, God exists. He was there. And so, who's this God that we're introduced to in the very beginning? Well, the English term is a translation of the Hebrew for Elohim. It's used 2,600 times in the Old Testament, 219 in Genesis, and it's a general name for God. In Genesis 1, it's in the context of God as creator. It recognizes that he's powerful, he's awesome, he is wholly other apart from his creation. It's interesting because the word is plural. And there's something called the plural the majestic plural we'll talk later about, and the verb create is singular, indicates that there is more than meets the eye here. But it can be argued that Elohim in Genesis 1:1 means God is one, but more than one. And sometimes Elohim can refer to God's representatives like judges, or it could be angelic beings. But we find this term for God, Elohim, 32 times in Genesis 1. And it mostly has to do with Elohim did this, and this, and this, and this. He spoke, he created, he separated, he called, he saw, he made, he placed, he blessed. And we're going to find out, there's a whole lot of things about him that we find out, especially in these first couple chapters. Among other things, this Elohim, this God who introduces everything, he is eternal, self-existing, creative, powerful, spirit, and triune. Guess what? We had a beginning. You don't remember that, but somebody probably does. But God didn't. He was always there. He is eternal. He doesn't age, because with God there's no time. He made time so he could make us. How that works, I don't know. It doesn't matter. When he introduced his personal name to Moses, he said, I am. Well, that kind of encompasses past, present, and future. In Psalm 90, we read, before the mountains were born, and you brought forth the earth and the world. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. God being eternal is beyond human comprehension. But I'll tell you what, it makes more sense than believing in eternal dust and gas and energy. Think about that one. When you see a watch, you know it didn't make itself. I hope you know it didn't make itself. Well, you know that a watchmaker did, and a watchmaker's more intelligent and greater than the watchmaker. You know, if you're walking through the forest, you see, let's say, like a really cool cell phone sitting on a log. You don't go, wow, a bunch of silicon assembled itself. I wonder if it works. Shazam. If you do, we have some more things to discuss. That's not our first thought. So why in the world do we go, wow, look at the trees and the animals and the birds and the water, and go, wow, you assembled yourself, Shazam. That doesn't make much more sense. Genesis 1:1 says, God, in the beginning, God. It doesn't say how he got there, just that he is. Answers in Genesis has lots of great stuff I encourage you to check out. And they asked a question, what if someone had to have made God? Who would that be? A super God. Well, who made the super God? A super, super God. Who made the super, super God? A super, super, super God. And of course, you can keep on going back and forth. It doesn't make sense. But again, that's what Darwinian evolution is telling us. Well, what made that? Well, that. What made that? That. What made that? That. What made that? That. What made that? That. And, you know, we can keep going all day. And then some people say, well, there's just not 14 billion years. There's just not enough, or 3.8 billion for the earth. There's just not time for human life to evolve here. So it must have come from aliens from another planet. There's a whole other thing called panspermia. If you reject the first miracle, you're going to get to some weird ones. But anyway, God is eternal. It means he always existed. The technical term for self-existing, something I just learned, this is the aseity of God. That's his attribute of being independent and self-existent. He's the uncaused cause. I don't know if you ever heard of that. The uncreated creator, the source of all things. He originated everything. He keeps everything going. If anything has its source or has its life or keeps going, it's because of God. He says, "For I am God, there is no other. I am God, there's none like me," in Isaiah. We see that God is creative. I mean, look what he made. Cheetahs, panda bears, you guys. We could just keep going. He's all powerful too. He's omnipotent. He makes making everything out of nothing is pretty impressive in my book. Nothing's impossible. He's also infinite. He's without limit or end. He's greater than any amount could number. If God always existed and he did and no one then made him, that means to do all he did, he's got to be pretty smart. I mean, it's real incredible. We study how all these natural processes work in the water cycle. Remember, they all got the water and then there's evaporation. Or maybe it's condensation or evaporation. Oh, I don't know. I'm all mixed up. You can tell. But we study that. God thought of it instantly. Oh, this is how it's going to work. Boom, there it is. God's also spirit in verse 2 of Genesis 1, which we don't have time to go to. He's going to talk about the spirit of God. He's also triune. Again, it mentions the spirit of God in 1, 2. And then other places, we know Jesus is involved in creation. It's interesting, if you skip down to 126, it says, "Let us." And that's an indication there's more than meets the eye, too. When God says, "Let us make man in our image." And we'll talk more about that later. You know, the first recorded miracle of Jesus wasn't turning water into wine. It was before creation. All things by him were created, things in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authority, all things were created by him and for him. And I read 1 John 1 at the very beginning of our service today. He was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made. It's interesting, at the very beginning we have a trinity of trinities. We have God, the Father, Son, Spirit. We have time, past, present, future. We end up with matter, solid, liquid, gas, and I think there's a whole bunch of other ones too. But in the beginning, God created. And created means God brought the universe into being without any materials. He wasn't searching on a shelf, looking in a bag, and going, "Oh, I think I'll use a little bit of this or this." No, no, no. You may have heard the term ex nihilo, out of nothing, nothing. These weren't just basic building blocks of the universe. No, the universe, God didn't have anything to work with. But he didn't need anything either. We read in Hebrews 11, "By faith we understand the universe was formed at God's command. So what was seen was made out of what was visible. What we see now did not exist." God brought everything into existence. In Psalm 33, "For he spoke and it came to be. He commanded and it stood firm." How does God do those things? Well, we don't exactly know, other than he spoke and it came to be. He spoke it. Genesis 1, 3, 6, 9, 14, 20, 24, and 26, they all start with, "And God said," and what happens next is, "And there was." Is that a miracle? Oh, yeah. But choose your miracle. You know, he sees nothing, he hears nothing, he uses nothing, he makes everything. That sounds like something only God can do. In the beginning, God created. That is amazing. You know, last week we had the giant Jenga, and I pulled the bottom out, Genesis 1 to 11. It took some doing because we had some talented young people with good balance, but eventually I got the tower to knock over. And, you know, I'm really convinced that you mess with Genesis 1 to 11, you're really undermining your whole faith. If we can't trust the first words of the Bible, how are we going to trust anything all throughout the rest of it? Because in those first three chapters, we were introduced to key doctrines like God, creation, the first people, marriage, gender, sexuality, sin, salvation, and so forth. Psalm 11 says, "If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do?" I believe we can trust our Bibles. I believe the Genesis 1 through 11 are critical and key for our faith. Again, you may have a little bit different take on things, and I'd say, let's talk. Let's dialogue. I will give you things to study, but I hope that you will come to a point and going, "Oh yeah, we can believe this book. You know, it's interesting. We've probably all met people who believe it's stupid to believe in God because no one could not have a beginning and always exist. But again, those are the same people who believe the universe just happened to pop into existence without, you know. If people don't believe in an infinite God, we need to ask them where matter came from, where time and space developed. They may say, oh, it's always existed. Well, guess what? That takes faith. Turn it back upon them. That's their miracle. Ask them to show you evidence that matter by itself ever made anything. Ask them, when's consciousness produce unconscious? Right? You know, that whole list of things I gave. Pause. Wait for them. They can't give any evidence. It makes more sense to believe that some sort of mind preceded stuff than that stuff made mind. I think it takes more faith to believe matter just appeared than that a God made it. In the book of Romans, we read, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what's been made, so men are without excuse." Basically, it says is, if you don't believe in the Creator God, you have no excuse, because look around what God has made. His power, his might, his creativity, his order, his complexity, his design. You know, and yet, what we find in nature is so much more complex than anything anybody has ever dreamed of coming up with. Think about flowers and trees. They're incredible, yes. And then think about the chipmunks amongst them. And the chipmunks have eyeballs. But don't stop with the eyeball. Think about the solitary cells within each eyeball, the trillions of them. And then think about inside that cell is DNA strands, which make the cell work and which replicate themselves. If it took intelligence to make simple things like cars and airplanes and computers and GPSs and trains and buildings, what kind of intelligence did it take to make everything else we see in the world and enable them to reproduce themselves and make copies? A much greater intelligence. In fact, an infinite intelligence, the God of the Bible, the God of creation, who hopefully is your God as well as mine. You will not understand it all at the end of the day. I guarantee it. You're not God, never will be. But you still have to make a decision. And that is, which miracle are you going to choose to believe when it comes to how everything got here? The miracle of self-existing, self-generating, eternal, immaterial, unconscious, chaotic, unalive, that means dead, random, without energy, nothingness plus time plus chance producing everything? Or the miracle of the God who in the beginning spoke? Choose your miracle. Lord God, I thank you that we can trust you in your word. I thank you that you're bigger than us. We don't understand you completely, but you've told us what we need to know for life in this world. We thank you, Lord, for the fact that we get to pop outside and see your beautiful creation. And Lord, even as we look at each other, may we say, wow, these people are made in your image. This is amazing too. I pray, Lord, that as we study more in your word, that we would be convinced more and more that your word is true. We can bet our lives on it no matter what anybody else says. Help us, Lord, to rejoice because we know the God who has revealed himself in words we can understand. It's in your name I pray. Amen.